Chapter 21. When Colonel Bonsu informed Major General Emily Perkins that an apparent Elder starship had attacked Earth's moon, and that humanity's ultimate defender had stood by and did absolutely nothing during the attack, she appeared genuinely stunned for only about a millisecond. She didn't even blink. "Do we have orders to pull out?" If he was surprised that the mission leader had not taken any time to process that Earth had been attacked by a freaking Elder starship, he didn't say anything. His ship had just jumped into orbit, and he was relieved to see the Ruhar squadron still there, with no presence by troublesome aliens such as the Theranon. There was fighting on the surface, but the bloodshed was restricted to minor, local skirmishes. He would receive a full briefing on the tactical situation when he finished speaking with Perkins, who had as usual skipped all the agonized hand-wringing about events she couldn't influence and gotten straight to the point. "We haven't received any orders. We came directly here without stopping at a relay station." "We're pulling off this rock now," she declared. Bonsu knew she had that authority. "Yes, ma'am." "Earth won't have resources to spare for a non-essential peacekeeping mission." "Yes," he agreed, though she appeared to be speaking to herself. "The Ruhar won't remain here after your ship and our two frigates leave. Their commander will pull his forces off the surface." He muttered something, unsure whether she expected him to participate in her internal dialogue. "Colonel," she asked, "can we fit the entire battalion aboard your ship?" "It will be tight," he admitted. The Operation Sunset Force had arrived aboard two transport ships with two assault carriers to bring the people and supplies to the surface. Now he had his single assault carrier and no transports. "We can cram 30 people aboard each of the frigates. Here, people will be bunking in docking bays with their dropships. We have procedures for that. It won't be comfortable." She managed a quick, tight smile. "The Army mentioned there might be uncomfortable situations when I signed up." "Colonel," her smile faded as quickly as it had appeared, "I'm concerned about our people being vulnerable while we pull out, and your ship being a tempting target up there. To minimize the time before the Dutchman can safely jump away, I am activating the carry-on protocol." "Ma'am, that is a lot of gear we will be leaving dirtside." "It can't be helped. I take responsibility. Not needing to transport the majority of our gear into orbit, how much time will that save us?" Ma'am, I'll ask my CAG and get back to you ASAP." He nodded to an officer who nodded and turned away. "Of course, if we're initiating a rapid pullout, the Ruhar will be forced to do the same." She stared at him, unblinking. "Leave most of their gear on the surface, I mean." A bell rang in Derek Bonsu's mind. An understanding dawned on him. "Oh, that is a lot of weapons and other dangerous things, ma'am. It might be best to designate a caretaker down there to make sure such equipment doesn't fall into the wrong hands." "That is the responsible thing to do," she nodded. "I will speak to the Verdcris about it." Perkins did not speak to the local Verds about taking care of the soon-to-be-discarded military gear. Instead, she spoke to her husband about it. He also didn't talk with the local Verds. He didn't have time. He was scrambling to make sure he had solid records on all the gear his security company would be leaving dirtside so he could send a bill to Undick for compensation. Instead, he called Sergeant Jates into his office. The hulking Verd soldier arrived looking pissed off, though that was his usual expression. "Hey." Dave barely looked from his laptop, on which he was verifying property records. "I need you to—" "Is it true?" Jates demanded. "Which part? That Earth was attacked by an Elder starship, that our Sentinel did abso-freaking-lutely nothing, or that we're pulling our boots off this rock ASAP?" "All of it is true, although I can only vouch for that last part."
"We are running away like cowards?"
"We are leaving because the UN DEFCON leader here ordered us to."
"Your wife issued those orders."
"That's the way it works, yeah."
"So we will run away and leave my people here to be slaughtered?"
"That's not—"
"They are my people."
"I get that. Really, I do. What—" Jates stiffened even more than his usual stiffness.
"I wish to remain here to serve with my people."
"Bullshit. Your government sent you here to serve under DEFCON, and as far as I know, you haven't received permission to do whatever the hell you want." "If you will let me finish, I
will speak with your wife."
"She is Major General Perkins to you, and if you will shut the fuck up for a moment, I can tell you—"
Jates loomed over Dave. "You are either very brave or very stupid."
"Hey,
I'm a multitasker. I can be both. Do you want to do something that could actually help your people here, or do you want to just stand there giving me the death glare?
I can do both also. He continued the death glare, but he closed his mouth.
Okay. General Perkins, has activated the carry-on protocol. Everyone is boarding the dropships with only their assigned personal gear. Technically, each person was allowed to bring a total of 36 kilos of gear, but a soldier's assigned gear typically massed almost 30 kilos, so there wasn't much left for truly personal items. The rest of our gear, all of it, we are not taking off this rock. That is everything. Rifles, ammo, rockets, anti-air, anti-armor missiles, sensors, all of it. General Perkins, expects the Ruhar will do the same. That means a mountain of dangerous weapons will be lying scattered around our bases here. Jates gave him a blank look until Dave added, if you know what I mean. The death glare disappeared. So I need someone, I would like that to be you, to contact our local liaison. Not that overenthusiastic kid they assigned to us, someone with authority. It would be best if the locals could move in as we pull out, to assure that we have someone to take care of our gear until we can come back here.
The locals will be expected to account for all the gear we transfer if we come back?
The gear is not being transferred. Just, we need caretakers, you know? You asked about accounting for everything the Verds are holding for us? Sadly, our property records are shamefully out of date, if you know what I mean. Jates nodded. He did not actually smile. That would have caused a rupture in the space-time continuum.
It is unfortunate, but what can you do?
Wow.
What?
Nothing. You're a Sergeant. Your job is to be a hard-ass about making sure everyone follows the rules.
To be clear, Jates did the looming thing again. If any one of my people's property records are not accurate and up to date, they will wish they had never been born.
Okay, thanks. For a moment there, I thought you were going soft on me.
Soft? Dave held up his hands.
Just go talk with the locals. Let them know the clock is ticking fast if they want to get their hands on weapons to defend themselves after we leave this rock. A few minutes later, he was able to talk with his wife.
Em, he began the conversation informally since the conversation was unofficial and needed to stay that way. Santa Jates has given the good news to the locals.
She laughed.
Santa Jates?
Yeah, he's given presents to all the good little girls and boys.
I can't picture Jates in a red jacket with a big white beard. This Santa wears active camo and gives away DEFCOM M27 standard infantry rifles instead of candy.
Do the bad girls and boys get a lump of coal in their stockings?
Yes, and he uses those stockings to give those little brats a beatdown.
A tough love, Santa. I like it.
Dave, she lowered her voice. I do not want you staying on the ground until the last minute.
My people have heavier weapons than anyone except your cavalry platoons. We'll be okay. We'll act as a rearguard force to cover the dropship landing zones.
That will make you a target for ambitious lizards.
You, personally.
Really?
My wife has two frigates and an assault carrier upstairs, and those ships have their railguns locked and loaded. You think the lizard leadership wants that kind of trouble right now?
Probably not, she conceded. The lizards want us off this rock as soon as possible so they can get back to the fun of killing Verds.
They'll get a nasty surprise when they learn that the Verds here are no longer unarmed. But that's not my problem.
All right. Dave, I probably won't see you again until we're aboard the Dutchman.
We can share your VIP quarters?
Probably more like a VIP closet.
Good enough.
Take care of your people and I'll take care of mine.
Love you.
He kissed two fingertips and pressed them to the laptop display.
Love you too, Em.
Heads up, Joe!
Skippy interrupted my thoughts while I was reading about recent upgrades to Valkyrie.
You're about to get a call from command.
Okay. I paused the scrolling PowerPoint slides.
Why? We might have a major problem. Well, we do have a major problem, but it might be even worse than I know about.
Break it down for me, okay?
Command requested that I contact the Guardians to activate them.
What? When was this?
About half an hour ago.
It irritated me that command hadn't informed me of their request.
They didn't need to keep me in the loop. In fact, their procedures for handling security matters definitely should not require me to do anything. Those procedures also should not require Skippy's involvement for the same reason. Either or both of us might not be anywhere near Earth. To find and stop Moonraider, we both had to jump away from my homeworld. Still, Command hadn't seen fit to include me in the communication channel. I hadn't gotten the memo, but I had received the message. UN Defense Command wanted independence from relying on Joe Bishop. Why would they activate the Guardians? That is the opposite of, I suppose I misspoke. The request was only for me to contact the Guardians and assure they can be activated.
That is probably a good idea. I stumbled over my words. Damn it, that's something I should have suggested. Was I losing my edge? Had I been out of the game for too long?
My initial response was that if Command wanted to make certain their primary defense system was working properly, I should request that Bubba contact the Guardians.
Good thinking.
Well, duh. That's when I became aware of the problem. Bubba pinged the Guardians and they did not respond.
Oh shit. The attack damaged them?
Ha! As if! No way, dude. The Terminator bots are powerful and possess a wide range of sophisticated capabilities, but they have zero chance to affect a Guardian in any way.
You can't be sure of that. It might be true of standard Terminators. I wish we had a more original name for those liquid nanomachine robots. But Moonraider's ship has technology beyond that of a standard Elder starship. Maybe the bots have been upgraded.
Well, I do know that for certain, because your moon does not have a massive new crater.
Listen, Dum-Dum. Guardians can protect themselves. They will protect themselves. If anyone or anything attempted to screw with them, they would have responded violently.
You screwed with them.
Not so much. All I did was provide them with an alternate assignment after the Ascension machine they were supposed to protect went kaboom, you know?
It went kaboom because of you.
I feel just terrible about it, anywho, that is not the point. They are Guardians. They need to guard something.
They knew the Ascension machine was doomed and there wasn't anything they could do about it. An Elder AI gave them a new assignment and they are happy to still have a purpose.
Otherwise, they would be like Ronin, roaming around the galaxy and looking for work.
You have watched Seven Samurai too many times, Knucklehead. Guardians aren't for hire. They don't work for money.
Then they would be like the Three Amigos, defending a town because it's the right thing to do.
The Three Amigos weren't warriors. Can we please get back to the subject?
You were explaining how you screwed with the Guardians, but you somehow know another Elder AI could not possibly have screwed with them.
What really matters is they are not responding to either me or Bubba. Yes, I also tried having Roscoe contact them also. No joy. Before you interrupt me with more stupid questions, my next step was to scan the vault. Joe, I can't see anything there. Something is blocking my sensors.
That's not good. Is the effect anything like whatever masking field thing was used by the bogey and by Moonraider's ship?
They are roughly similar technologies is my guess. Don't ask me for specifics. I simply have no information.
You think the Terminators left something like a stealth field generator at the bottom of the hole?
Yes.
Okay, so how do we turn it off?
There is a complication. Of course there is. Running back all available sensor data on the raid and looking at it very closely, I realized something that could be a problem. 11 Terminator bots dropped down the shaft into the vault.
The same number came back. Chang's people verified that.
The same number, but not the same mass. Joe, the bots transformed before they rose back up to the ship carrying their payloads, transformed their shapes, and all of them were measurably smaller.
Closing my eyes, I asked the question, though I didn't want to hear the answer.
How much smaller? Enough to make 2.5 full-size Terminators. Or a bunch of smaller ones.
As Skippy predicted, Command contacted me after Skippy dropped another steaming pile on my head. In truth, DEFCOM had called me while I had been speaking with Skippy, and the beer can put them on hold. He apparently had even played annoying hold music that was a scratching, distorted version of an old song everyone hates. So the Joint Chiefs of Command were in a super great mood when I finally answered my freaking phone, and I didn't bother to give an excuse. The conclusion was that we needed to get eyes in the vault to see what was going on down there. Skippy admitted that given enough time, a Terminator just might be able to do bad things to a Guardian. not get the machine to switch its loyalties, but get it to explode. DEFCOM was not in favor of a large chunk of our moon becoming a new crater. That's when I called in Colonel Frey. She sat quietly in my office, listening intently as I explained the situation. Both hands were in her lap, the knuckles not white, her hands not clenched into fists. The only sign of the tension she had to be feeling was the way she bit the left side of her lower lip. When I finished, she nodded.
"What do we know about the environment down there?"
Skippy answered, because the question had been addressed to him.
"No, we don't know anything. My sensors can't penetrate whatever masking field the enemy is using."
"Indirect sensors, then?"
"Seismic sensors indicate something is moving around down there, though the effect is subtle and does not indicate any sort of pattern of activity."
"I assume we tried sending drones down the shaft?"
"DEFCOM did, and no joy." Skippy shook his head. "The drones go offline 2 kilometers above the vault. A camera on a crude fiber optic cable was lowered down the shaft. It blanked out and was severed. Something down there does not like unwanted visitors. DEFCOM even maneuvered a satellite directly above the shaft and fired a low-powered laser down to illuminate the bottom. 2 kilometers above the vault, the laser light was absorbed." She took a moment to process the information.
"Sir,"
she turned her focus to me,
"what is the objective?"
"Those guardians are vital defense assets." I spoke the words without emotion, simply stating the fact. "They need to be secured and brought back into a useful condition." She bit her lip again.
"Is preventing the guardians from being used against us a secondary objective?"
"No." It was my turn to shake my head. "Bubba can do that for us. If there is any sign a guardian has been compromised, that part of the moon will be launched into another dimension. You monkeys do not want that to happen," Skippy warned. "The sudden loss of so much mass would trigger moonquakes and make the entire sphere wobble." "Bubba couldn't scoop out just the vault?" "Being subtle is not a core competency of Sentinels, Joe. Their motto should be overkill is underrated."
"I think that motto is already—"
"My point is," he huffed, "if you want to keep the nice guardians I gave you, someone will have to go down there with a big can of bug spray." Frey shifted on her chair.
"What actual weapons do we have that could be effective against a Terminator?"
"A broad beam of directed energy is the only way to fry the nanogel," Skippy sighed. "Unfortunately, the beam needs to not only be broad enough to cover the entire target, it must have the power of a battleship's main guns. Even with mech suits, a star team can't carry weapons with that firepower. Any sort of kinetic weapons will only make the nanogel splatter, and if you get any of it on your mech suit, that is—"
"I am familiar with the effect, thank you."
Frey didn't raise her voice. She didn't have to. Her left leg below the knee had been regrown after her original shin had been eaten by a blob of nanogel during Star Team Alpha's operation to capture the Elder space dock.
"We were able to use plasma beams to disperse the nanogel."
"Yes, but your rifles back then had only 5 plasma shots before the power cell had to be recharged. The standard rifles you carry now don't include a plasma option because the usefulness of that capability is so limited." "We could modify—" I started to suggest. "No good, Joe. In the assault on the space dock, the Star Team was opposed only by repurposed maintenance bots. The amount of nanogel available to the defenders was tiny compared to—"
"I did not mean the nanogel in that fight was not significant. It just—"
"I understand what you mean." Frey's tone was calm, but her nostril flared. "Colonel," I said softly, holding up a hand to stop Skippy from talking. "You don't have to do this. Star Team Cobra is now DEFCOM's rapid reaction force. They—"
"None of them have been there."
She bit off her words.
"Sir, there are only 3 people who have survived an encounter with Elder Defense bots. Your wife is one of them. I am the only one here now. I should go. And if I'm going, I want my team with me."
"It's your call, Colonel." I leaned forward across the desk. "My concern is this could be a suicide mission. You heard Skippy. Your team can't carry any weapon powerful enough to be effective down there."
"Sir, since the day we—"
She stopped talking, and her lips drew into a tight line as she remembered pain. My guess was she was not thinking about the leg she had lost. She was thinking about the people she had lost. People who might have survived if she had done a better job. Well, that was bullshit. She had to know that. It didn't mean she didn't still feel it.
"Every day, every single day since then, I have been thinking about what we could have done better."
"Be careful, Frey. I know from experience that engaging in what-ifs can be a downward spiral.
Your team didn't have much to work with, and you did not have enough time to prepare. There is no rush here. You should consider... Skippy faked a cough. I'm afraid that is not quite true, Joe. Something is going on down in the vault. I am picking up gamma radiation coming from there. The radiation is weak but increasing in strength, and the spikes are coming closer together. What does that mean? My guess, and it is only a guess, is that the Terminator down there is constructing and testing some sort of machine. Some sort of machine? I assume it does not make snow cones, so come on. You don't have any idea what is going on down there? What kind of machine emits gamma rays? Well, even you should be able to answer that question. It can't be. Oh my God, it's building a jump drive down there? Or something like it. Shit. That is why I said we might be running out of time to stop whatever is going on down there. Why the hell didn't you mention this until now? I detected the first gamma rays less than a minute ago. Command probably is not aware yet. I'm informing them now. Shaking a finger at him, I warned, "Do not tell me that AI's minions are trying to steal the freaking moon. I do not know what the intent is, only that it is unlikely to be good for us." All right, this is getting out of control. I slapped a hand on the desk. "I'm going to advise command that Bubba should..." "Sir?" Frey interrupted me while I was working up to a dramatic declaration. "I'd like to finish what I was saying." Yes. Go ahead. "I've been thinking about how a star team could defeat Elder Nanobots, and I have a possible solution I want to review with Skippy. And with you, sir."
"Does this solution require me to do anything?" Skippy rubbed his chin. "If so, it ain't gonna work. I have no visibility into that vault."
Frey should have been discouraged. Instead, she smiled. The kind of humorless smile that meant she intended to give some asshole a well-deserved beatdown. "I thought of that also."
"Frey." I stopped her in the passageway after we left the meeting. There was something I had to tell her. Something I realized only after she had walked out the doorway.
"Sir?"
Her expression was both anxious and annoyed. Anxious that I might have just changed my mind, annoyed that if I hadn't changed my mind, she wanted to get on with the mission without more blah blah blah.
"You don't have to do this."
"Sir, we just..." "I should have said you don't have to do this."
"Yes."
She stared at me without blinking.
"I do."
"Okay, you're right."
"Sir, you just..."
"Frey, I know why you need to go on this op. I want you to be honest with yourself about why you're doing it. Nothing that happens today will bring back ST Alpha."
"It's not about that."
She hesitated.
"It's not only about that. If this works, then Alpha did have a chance to survive. We just hadn't thought of it at the time."
"We hadn't thought of it.
It's not all on your shoulders, Frey."
"Sir, after..."
"After we took the space dock. After Team Alpha accomplished the mission."
She emphasized the only good thing that happened to the star team that day.
"I spent a long time in recovery. The physical part was hard. The mental part was worse. I didn't know whether I would return to duty with a star team because I didn't know if I cared. Everything seemed pointless. After I got my leg back, I requalified, and that was easy. It was something I didn't have to think about. Lift the weights, put in the miles, run the drills, shoot the weapons. Then I stalled. No matter what I did, I couldn't find a purpose in life. Then I met my husband. We had a baby. I have a girl. I love that girl. I love my husband. Skippy, if we don't stop Moon Raider, what will happen to Earth?"
Skippy spoke without his avatar appearing. "I'm guessing nothing good. For Earth and every planet in this galaxy and beyond."
Frey nodded. "I am doing this not for me, or for ST Alpha, or for Smythe. I'm doing this for my family. Stopping our new enemy begins here."
She pointed to the deck. I understood she meant the vault. Raising my right hand, I saluted her. "Who dares wins?" She returned the salute and shook her head.
"That is the SAS motto, sir. In Canada, our special forces motto is, we will find a way."
"When you get down in the vault, find a way. To win and to come back."
"We will, sir."
Skippy? I called the beer can after I was back in my chair and the door was closed. I have to brief DEFCOM about this lunatic plan. What level of schmaybe can you give me about your confidence?
Geez, Joe, I don't know.
Really, I don't. The physics are theoretically solid, if more than a bit wild. The problem is there is no way to test it. I can't even create a model for virtual testing, since I have almost no information about the environment down in the vault. The only way we will know whether this works is to do it for real. The real issue is something I can't control, have never been able to control.
What's that?
We have a solid plan. But as you military people are so fond of saying, the enemy also makes plans.